In this podcast, we're going to talk about transistors. By the end of listening to this, you should know basically what a transistor looks like, the name of the three terminals, some basics about the symbol and how to read the symbol. There's sort of certain really fundamental things about about the symbol to look about and its use in circuits. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I talk about things scientific, in this case, trying to get some base information in about the transistors, whereas diodes are your fundamental solid state component. A transistor is the sort of next grade up, and whereas at school people really don't teach diodes, they definitely don't teach transistors. Now, you may say, should they do it? Well, yeah, look, technology is advancing much faster than schools are comfortable at teaching it. I mean, they've got this sort of basic thing that I'm going to be comfortable teaching it at a certain level. So diodes, transistors, let's go back through the history of all this. Before, at the very, very start, we needed what is a non-linear component, a component which was sort of programmed by the voltage applied to it, and that is a diode. If the voltage is in the correct direction, is a conductor. If it's in the wrong condition, it's a insulator, something which is non-reciprocal or is a different, depending on how you wire it up, is a non-linear component. And we started off with crystals. We'll make it very simple. Crystals, valves, and man-made crystals or silicon. I see. So it went through that process. So it started off with crystals, and crystals were naturally occurring semiconductors. You walk around the garden and you can pick up a rock and look at it. It can multi-crystalline, and you can actually wire it up so it's a diode, so your early crystal radios would produce this. So we started off using solid state. So solid state really means the physics of crystals, of electrons in a mesh or lattice of ions, and it really means, unfortunately, people, quantum mechanics. So this is, people throw their hands up and say, look, I'm uncomfortable teaching this, we're never going to cover it. And so there we have generations and generations of people leave schooling with a knowledge sort of like the 1890s type of knowledge. Yet, unfortunately, times has changed in the last 120 years. So, if we look at, so we've got our crystal for a diode, and that's got a depletion region and various points like that. There's NPN. Even in your crystal is like that, and it has a depletion layer, a layer of very strong insulator, and that layer of strong insulator grows depending on how many electrons or holes you throw into that. So if you throw charge carriers into the depletion region, it vanishes, and there's no depletion region. Electrons can actually move across this insulation barrier. But if you put it the opposite way, the insulation barrier grows. That's your basic diode, and the diode was used to rectify AC signals and pick off a DC mean of it. So your radio waves would come in, and it would listen to the radio waves and not respond to the radio waves, but accumulate charge or accumulate voltage depending on how large the excursions were. So you could actually change the strength of your radio wave with your voice. So it would send out bursts of radio waves mapping the pressure waves of your voice coming in, and someone could hear that voice reconstructed in your radio. So it started off with crystal radios. And people really fundamentally didn't understand how crystals worked. There you go. And so, but they did understand another effect, and that's thermionic emission of electrons from a hot metal surface. So you've got electrons swimming around a metal. We say, imagine that, they're swimming around a metal. And if you heat them up enough, electrons can be thrown out. And they're thrown out a little bit, and if they catch, scooped up by a prevailing electric field, they can go from the emitter, the heated emitter. I'm giving you this. This is the giving you the terms later on for a from a triode to a transistor. So the triode is referred to a three-wire valve. It's called a triode, but really it had multiple wires besides just the three wires, three circuit wires, and at least two servant wires to heat up your emitter. So the emitter is hot, and it actually boils off electrons. Above it is a grid. Now, the grid, the G, converts to modern terms of called the base, even though, like, it's ancient terms, but it's been pulled into the modern era. So this grid sat above your hot filaments, and this grid created a local electric field just above your element. So for the local electric field, if you put a lot of electrons on that local electric field, the electrons would walk away from the metal and go, oh, I'm not going to go to that place. It's got lots of charge on it. I'm going to go back. But if you actually took the electrons away from that field, bear in mind that this little grid is receiving electrons all the time from electrons which boil off the emitter. It will actually, if that goes positive, the electrons will go, I'm definitely leaving now, and they will leave en masse in a big way. And if the emitter is a grid with big holes in it, some will the base or grid. Some will hit on that grid or mesh, but some will flow through, and then they'll flow through and actually hit the collector. Now, I've described a slightly more complex way with that. Where it's set up at the moment, it can, if you've just got a collector and emitter, just the two together, that acts as a one-directional thing. So electrons can leave the emitter, but electrons can't leave the collector because the emitter is hot, the collector is cold, so it can't. If you heat it up both, it could go both ways. And that simpler version is the electrical equivalent of a valve, and this is why we call glass tubed components, evacuated glass tube components, valves. What I described there is a triode, and so by gently affecting the field, the electric field, the voltage or potential difference of the grid reference to the emitter, you can determine the basic lift of electrons away from that emitter. So you can actually put a lid on the emitter by putting electric charge in the grid, and that will push the electrons back down. There's a bit of physics into it, and again, quantum physics to explain it, but you can imagine it without quantum physics. So the imagination of this is with classical physics. The classical electrons will flow forward. So depending on the minute voltage you put into the grid or base, you can actually control the current through. It's not necessarily voltage. These things are current devices, and this is what we'll have to get through to you. Now, this is all very well. So tubes are beautiful little things. Each tube took a few hours to make, and they're much more complicated than you actually think. There's the glass blowing, the hollowing out, the formation of the electrodes. There's just so many, many pieces. Would take a worker at least a day, or perhaps 2 days, to actually make a good transistor. A triode. And it's still elements of black art. And of course, you had huge factories and people skilled and rigs all set up, and they'd make hundreds at a time. But they would all have to go through and baked. It's like a little TV tube, or a TV is probably an example of a tube. So we used to watch it. What's on the tube tonight? And when I was a kid, you could easily get an old portable gramophone with the globe, the tubes at the back, and the old TVs. When you look at it, they wouldn't be able to build the solid state stuff, and so there'd still be tubes in the back, and you'd hear that sort of yellowy glow. And it'd take a while to heat up, so when you switch it on, things would heat up. Of course, you're making smaller, bigger TVs required bigger tubes and took longer to heat up. And you can, that old classic thing when the TV switched off, you'd see the electronic switch off, and the things would cool down. You'd see that last little spot in the centre when it's all lined up. That's enough of that. So that's the actual fundamental device we're going to talk about, which is the triode. The triode made a transition to a transistor. So it's a resistor which can be programmed. And it's very tempting to think of a transistor as a programmable resistor, like a variable resistor, a knob. And it's sort of like that, but there's other things... the way that it behaves. So what we're going to do is just go into the symbols first. So the original symbol of a diode is a flat plate with a needle on it. And I really think the direction of the current in a diode is in the direction of the triangle. So you start off, typically you've got in conventional electric circuits, the power supply, the power source is on the left, the positive rails the top, and then your traditional direction of current flow is from the top down wires with little arrows down the page to the base bottom rail, and your traditional diode is a triangle pointing a flat plate pointing downwards, and if it's producing light, it has little arrows pointing out saying, hey, I'm producing light. Or if it's a one which is a breakdown one, it's a Zener diode. The plate has got a little squiggle on it to indicate it's a Z. And that's actually operated in the reverse direction, because Zener diodes, depends on how the Zener diodes use. That's the diodes. We've covered that. Transistors. I want to get to transistors. So... transistors have a diagram, and it's not from point A to point B. There's actually three wires going to a transistor, as there's three wires going into a valve. Now, a valve, which is called a triode, and there are three wires in a transistor. So there are two types of transistors. There's NPN, which we're going to stick with, or PNP. PNP is a little bit more tricky to get your mind around, because things are going backwards. and so there are three wires in a transistor, and I'm going to work backwards or from the bottom upwards. There's the emitter, there's the base, which is our grid, which is the thing that injects or controls everything, and there's the collector. So the emitter in the old days, in old money, was the heated up wire. So this is where the carriers are coming from. The symbol is a wire coming into a plate, usually from left to right. There's a plate down, and then there's arrows, there's wire going out, bouncing off the plate and moving upwards. I don't know, that's the way it looks. And typically there's an arrow on one of those wires. So the arrow on one of the, so you don't have two arrows there. There's an arrow on the wire going from the collector to the emitter. Now, just to make it realistic, we always have the arrow on the emitter. Right, the arrow is on the emitter. That's because that's where the light is trying to go out, and the plate is saying, "Well, I let you. Well, let your arrow continue." That's the way I remember it. So I've got a circle, a line coming in like a bit and going to a plate, a vertical line, and then a line coming up, bouncing off the plate and bouncing off again. All in a circle, or not necessarily in a circle. A circle makes it very busy. So I think in the old days we always used to have circles around it. Nowadays it's just the three wires coming in. Basically, a wire which would normally go through. It's actually got a kink in it, and the kink hits a plate, like a valve plate, and that valve plate is connected to the base. So go through the various things. It's the emitter, emitter, base, collector, and the emitters always have the arrow on it. Now here's the trick. If the arrow is pointing away from the base to the emitter, so the arrows are always base to emitter, that's always in that section. If the arrow is pointing away from it, it's an NPN junction. If the arrow is pointing from the emitter to the base, i.e. that's positive charge going through, it's a PNP type. But we're going to go on the NPN type. It's just conceptually a little bit easier to talk about the positive voltages and the positive currents, and everything's positive. Now, here's another tip. Because the convention of circuits are that you have your power supply on your left circuit and your load on the right, and that current flows in a clockwise direction up through the positive power supply, through the positive top rail, and then comes downwards, so it's coming downwards. And all transistors have, if they're correctly positioned, have their little arrow pointing downwards. So a proper NPN transistor will have the collector up the top, base, and then an arrow connecting the indicating from the base to the emitter. So base to emitter, arrow in that direction is NPN. If it's in the opposite direction, that is the opposite way around, the emitter will be at the top because it's emitting positive stuff, and the arrow will be going from the emitter to the base. That's the opposite direction. And so you've flipped it over and flipped it up. So the no matter which way you NPN or PNP, the arrows are always, when they go through the transistors, are always coming from the top to the bottom, from the positive rail to the negative, as it continues in a clockwise direction. So that's just a tip to go through when you're looking at stuff. And then if the arrow generally is pointing from the base to the emitter, that's an NPN. And in general, if it's positioned correctly in the circuit, the arrow will be on the bottom side. But if the arrow is coming from the, it's drawn at the top, going downwards, it's going from the emitter at the top, collector, to the from the collector to the base to the emitter. If it's going that way, it's a PNP. So that's just a simple way of looking at circuits. And I think people, transistors, I don't know, when I speak to people, they go a bit fuzzy, but they're pretty easy to know. Once you know that the place where the arrow is, the little sign on the where the arrow is, that's the emitter, the wire in between is the base, and the wire without the arrow on it, the circuit wire without the arrow, is the collector where the current winds up. And then to know that the arrow is always on that emitter base section, and then if it's pointing from the base to the emitter, then that's a NPN type, and the opposite way, and that the arrows in the circuits always go in that clockwise direction, unless there's something unusual, and I can't remember seeing a circuit. Oh, yeah, look, there are some complicated circuits. Okay, I can't remember now some complicated circuits, but look, there are reasons for that. That's because the polarity of the circuit. Go forward. Okay, now, so it turns out that triodes were current amplifiers, and the main thing with a transistor, the most important thing to think about a transistor is where it's a battery, your chemical battery is a constant voltage source, i.e. it supplies more volts, more current, such as got constant voltage coming out. So it's only 1.5 volts, and if you take a little current or a lot of currents, it will try as hard as it can to give 1.5 volts. Transistors try as hard as they can to ensure the same amount of current is coming out. And your bulk standard transistor, which costs 5 cents, 3 cents, something very cheap, sort of the dirt cheap. And when you're buying it, you're paying not for the transistor, but you're paying for the person to get out of a package and down from the shelf. The transistors are so unbelievably cheap nowadays. You're paying for packaging and handling. The transistor is just, it really is nothing overall. Their main thing that they do is that they supply constant current. That is that, and what they do is they are a current amplifier, or effective current amplifier. So for a current of generally the gain of a transistor, it's sort of a naked transistor, is around about 1,000 for a cheap one. So if you put in a 10 microamps, just roughly speaking, into the base, that's into the base of a CBE NPN resistor, it will, in general, for a voltage range of, 20 volts. Well, 20 volts is pretty much the maximum voltage that transistors can arrange. From 20 volts, from say 15 to 5 volts applied across it, it will limit, I'd say 10, it will lend that to 10 milliamps. So, yeah, it's 10 microamps. Or 5 microamps. So, really small microamps on one side will limit it to that number of amps, and there will be a slight change if you increase voltage through it. It will release more, a little bit more, say 10% more, from 15 volts to 5 volts. It's just experience. But the amazing thing is that if you put an ammeter, and this is the thing you basically have to do, is put an ammeter down from downstream or upstream, directly from your transistor, put another milliamp meter on the inside, and what will happen is that you can set up a separate circuit, if you like, for the determine a constant milliamps into the transistor will mean the constant milliamps but of a much greater scale out of it. It'd be nice if I had a meter with two needles on it, so you could see that the two needles move in concert. Yeah, that was, someone should build that for me. That would be great. That would be great to demonstrate. And the thing is that you can just whack that voltage across, change it from 5 to 15, and there'll be hardly any change. And that's what a transistor very much does. And once you understand that, we can actually go off and build some quite interesting circuits. And so what we've done is that we've had sort of almost a nightmare experience with valves. We've worked out how the sort of thing we wanted And then some Americans, Schottky and various people, have gone off. Various companies, Motorola's still there, but various companies have disappeared. Have produced artificial crystals which mimic the fantastic electrical ideas we had. We imagined originally in glass, little glass vacuum tube valves. So the important thing that the vacuum tube valves, I should explain, is it's a glass tube and electrons can come off it because we've sucked out all the air. Now, in this case, the electrons are free to move because the air is held away because it's actually inside a crystal. So both cases, the electrons are free to, the electrons take center stage in the tube because there's no air to rob it, in the crystal because it's actually in its home base of crystal. So let's go over the transistor once again. It's two types of transistors, NPN, so N-type silicon, P-type silicon, N-type silicon, depending upon the actual doping you put in it. So if you N-type, typically you dope with boron. I'm just going off the top of my head. I really, normally when I talk about this, I just have to brief myself with DECPAVE to go into it. Phosphorus for a bit of positive stuff, and by terming your layer, your doping layer, you can create a crystal, build up an artificial crystal with NPN, and though they have depletion layers, or I've forgotten what bases, gone off the top of my head what it is. So the actual symbol for a transistor is moving from left to right. Left comes in the base. This is the typical way it's drawn. Left comes in the base and then expands out to a base plate, which is the old grid. And if you imagine, that's sort of like a stopping valve. So if you can imagine, it's actually there, actually squeezing the wire, which goes from the emitter to the collector. So the emitter to the collector, in this case, the electrons are traveling upwards, and just due to the way electricity is done, we consider electrons as charge carriers. However, the conventional current is positive. So the current is going from, the voltage is going from the collector down through the base and to the emitter, and your little arrow is there pointing from your base to your collector, because that tells you whether it's NPN or PNP, depending where the arrow is pointing with. And the arrow is always on the collector side. And yeah, I've decided that I'd stop. I was going to do a podcast on how to make a little tone generator, which is something that I think all kids should be able to do. They should be able to just get a few. You need a battery, a speaker, two transistors, reasonably strong resistor, and a capacitor. And that, there you go. And then you can make these fantastic tone generators. Basic piece of equipment that you really need for teaching electronics. Oh, did I say a battery? Battery for it. So that's the basis of electronics. And this is the first time I've ever tried to describe a transistor, and of course it is worthwhile actually playing with these transistors. There used to be stacks of transistors. You used to be able to get little tin can transistors, but now it's all in a little solid state in a pretty little epoxy package, and really it's sort of a crying shame, because you can total cost of two transistors, to build up an oscillator, is probably around 20 cents or less, and you really need to do it. Really need some basic experience doing this for a number of reasons, because there's no way that, I can't imagine trying to teach people on these ICs. This is where there's multiple transistors in a package. It's conceptually a bit too hard. Thanks for listening, and I hope I've just transferred information. This is a lot of basic information. It sort of strikes me that I've never been in a position to actually all my years of instructions just to teach it. And consequently, aside from electrical engineers, which I speak to, which I've come across, and enthusiasts, the general students I speak to have had no experience with it. They have, I don't know. Oh, look, can I just do the VI characteristics? So for a transistor, you have your VI characteristics. You vary the voltage and you get a certain current. So what happens is you set a current into your base at, say, 10 microamps. And as I've said, it's obviously if no volts, you get no current. But very quickly, after about 2 volts or something like that, it will turn over and give you a constant current. I don't know, off the top of my head, remembering 10 milliamps, for instance. So you've got your ammeter, which is reading the current through your transistor, and you have put the accelerator. Can you imagine that the foot on an accelerator? You've put the foot on the accelerator a little bit. Then, and that's a flat line across. That's one line. Now you could get another chart, but you could, on the same chart, you can actually plot a second line. You could say put your foot on the accelerator. You put your foot on the accelerator, and you're releasing more current through it. And say that's 20 microamps, 20 millionths of an amp. This is incredibly small amount of current. And this is going to let 1,000 times greater current through. So it starts off at zero and move up to 20 milliamps and go across with a slight, as you ask it to do more and more, it becomes a little bit more voltage sensitive. But you get these flat lines across. And so your transistor characteristics, particularly noted, there's something which I find rather confusing drawn for PNP, but for NPM, which is as nature intended, as close as possible to the existing triode, you get this representation of basically these contour plots where, well, it's hard to imagine, these multiple characteristics. So it's your transistor characteristics is your VI characteristics, the resistance characteristics, but the resistance characteristics is this bizarre thing, which is constant current, and the constant current will just slave to the input current, the base current. Now, what can I say? You can listen to me, but it's best to go into the internet and have a look at some NPN characteristics would be a good thing to look at, and look ASIC transistors. I've forgotten. There used to be a large number of them. They're 3904, 3906, 3902, different ones. And there's your bulk standard hobby transistors. I think they're only made for hobbyists. I don't think any application uses them nowadays, but you can still pick them up through. Yeah, I can't remember what company makes them. So I hope this is useful for people listening to it, and hope it fully explains it. And what I've tried to do is give you a picture of crystal valve tubes, evacuated vacuum valve tubes, to man-made crystals with a bit of engineering in it, which is combined the engineering that we're able to put into valves into our solid state stuff. And I hope I've given you some basic feedback on how to read these things. They're not complicated at all to read, and a little bit of knowledge, knowing collector, base, emitter, base, collector. I'll have to go through, I may re-record this to make sure that I've done it correctly.